gentlemen, welcome to Comic Book Club! Now, when they're not eating pizza and fighting ninjas, they're your hosts, Pete LePage and Justin Tyler!
Man alive, what's up?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And also known as Michelangelo and
Raphael.
What do you think, Splinter? I don't know.
Dude, I'm definitely Raph.
Are you surly enough to be Raph?
Yes.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
That's not even a question. Shout out to Kenny, our amazing announcer.
Yes, our great announcer. Always killing it. Yeah. Fresh topical references, as usual.
Well, there's a big movie coming out. People are excited about it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
That's right.
Are you going to go see it on Friday, Pete?
Yeah. Go.
Is anyone else excited for this movie?
Yeah.
That's 1.5 people.
Hey, speaking of important movies that just came out, did you happen to see Guardians of
Boyhood?
The Galaxy?
Boyhood? Are you talking about Boyhood?
No. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy, yes.
Yeah, the number one movie of the summer.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you went and saw it.
I saw it.
I watched the trailer over and over again in my room, and I thought it was great.
So you watched the trailer for like 2 hours straight?
No, of course I saw it. Did you guys see it in the crowd? We're going to talk about it later on the show, but what a fucking killer movie.
Yeah.
It did amazing money, broke all the August records. We're going to see 19 sequels.
Yep.
At least. Buckle up. Yeah. Eventually, every Wednesday is going to be a new Marvel movie. Yeah. Just like it's new movie day instead of new comic book day.
That would be actually kind of cool.
But let's kick the show off. We got some great guests
tonight. We do have an amazing guest.
They wrote the play King Kirby and Do a Million Things. He's all on stage. Fred Van Lente and Crystal Skillman.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming. Welcome. Please have a seat. Join us. It's great to have you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, great. Two beers, no beer. That's the way.
And I have water.
And a water, of course. Three beverages is classic Fred Van Lente. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. Pick up those microphones. Oh, yeah. Yep, that's okay. These tables were built to spill, like all great tables.
Spillinator 2000. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing very well.
Yeah.
So, King Kirby, you are a playwriting team. I guess. Husband and wife, playwrights.
I'm a virgin playwright. Mostly I write comics, but Crystal sort of guided me through the process.
Aww.
So tell us about this was hardcore professionalism, Pete. There's no awing.
Oh, sorry.
It was the home office.
Serious theater.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us about the play.
Well, I sort of became fascinated by the life of Jack Kirby like a long time ago, like in the 90s. And I started writing a biography about him that I eventually sort of abandoned. And then I sort of tried it as a play just because I was dating Crystal at the time.
And you were like, let me charm her.
I was like, yeah.
I got this play.
Yeah,
I can write
a couple lines.
And so I did a draft that didn't really work. I was a younger writer then. And then...
And she destroyed you for it. She tore you apart.
She did. No, she didn't.
So
she was very encouraging. She's very encouraging. And then fast forward 10 years later and...
And we had the opportunity with the Comic Book Theater Festival happening this summer, and we were very close. We had I had given some notes on it, and I didn't really know I was a co-writer until Fred gave me a draft back with my name on it.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I guess we're co-writing this. And it made me really excited. So when we did another pass at it for the draft for the Comic Book Theater Festival, we were working on it together. And it was a great opportunity to show the play there. So we're really excited about what that can do. And when we started talking about Jack and his story, we realized there was such a need for this, and that was really exciting.
And it debuted in June. The festival was in June in Williamsburg.
Right.
Yep.
How was that experience seeing... I mean, obviously, you see your work on stage all the time. But this is like a perfect child of the two of you, half of each of your DNA.
Yes.
That's biology talking. I was a chemistry major briefly.
I don't believe that.
Before I became a classically trained actor.
No, I don't believe that's true.
That's very true, buddy. It got much harder in college.
It was amazing. We had a wonderful cast, including Stephen Ratazzi, who's perhaps best known as in this crowd as he's Dr. Orpheus on the Venture Brothers.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He's a great stage actor. He did a wonderful job as Kirby. We have one of our fine actors here, but we'll get to that shortly.
Exciting.
It was amazing. We sold out. We had a wonderful Times review, so we sold out immediately. We had to add an extra show. And I should say we couldn't have done without the fine backers on Kickstarter. We kickstarted it and it's a successful Kickstarter campaign. This was one of the rewards. You got a playbook of the script, but some people asked me for the book that I slapped it up my website, fredbenlay.com, if you're interested. You can order it there. But yeah, it was just amazing.
And it was really exciting. We knew the script was really solid, but I think, you know, there was a lot of feeling like, you know, I also feel like really responsible for the comic book community because I wrote a play called Geek that's placed in the anime convention and stuff that definitely is inspired by, you know, going around and being booth babe to Fred for many years and then just meeting great cosplayers and having those relationships and yeah. Aw.
Yeah, but you so know, much awe. This is a really emotional show. Love story.
It's because I'm a lady. I'm bringing awes. But I really, it's a community I feel very dear to, and I feel like when comics and theater go together, it's like peanut butter and chocolate to me. It's like the best. Yeah. So I felt a lot of responsibility about, wow, you know, this is, you know, Kirby's story and really how to be imaginative and theatrical about it, but also, you know, get a kernel of truth in there. And so it was really exciting to see how many people were excited, both from Kickstarter, then also the response to the play itself, and also in the rehearsal process. You know, we investigated each step along the way. You know, it is history, but also it is drama. It has to live. It is our imagining. We weren't there. We didn't get into a little teleporting device and go back.
Oh, no? Like, that's how plays are written. That's how Shakespeare
does. That's right. It's exactly the way
it is. And I guess I should have asked this at the beginning. Does everyone here know who Jack Kirby was?
Yeah.
Cool.
Come on. These guys are
pros. For those of you who don't know, I mean, Kirby wasn't just sort of the seminal creator of comics and co-creator of comics of Captain America and Fantastic Four, the whole Marvel Universe, New Gods. He co-invented romance comics, which is crazy. but he's like the Zelig of comics. He's kind of everywhere. But he also had this fascinating life where he grew up he was born not far from here on Suffolk Street, what was then the Jewish ghetto, the Lower East Side, and he lived through Depression, and he fought in France during World War II, and he, you know, his kind of cosmic trippy superhero comics became a big part of the counterculture of the 60s. And so he's sort of, his life is sort of an arc of the 20th century, and that's kind of what the play is about.
Yeah. Wow.
And then a lot of people, when I would talk about the play that, you know, don't really know comics, although it would be like, that's so awesome. I read something called Cavalier and Clay that's like, right. I guess, you know, his life was ripped off of that. I go, no, it's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
So it was, you
someone
know,
he ripped his life off from that book. That's, no, I wish I could do that.
You know, right? Yeah. Wouldn't it be amazing?
I keep trying to rip my life off from James Bond. Yeah. I keep failing.
I've been trying that for
someone explain to me how you can do that.
Well, you order the right drink a lot, and I think then the intrigue comes
through. Genesee
toward
beer.
You. Not shaken.
It's what MI6 drinks when they're in Rochester.
Yeah. Man, so much Rochester talk in this show.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And so you do have an actress here tonight.
An actor.
An actor. Yes. Oh, excuse me. Yes.
Sorry to... wanted to perform with
Well, yeah, I know. I thought that's what we talked about.
He does voices, too.
I thought that. Good, yeah.
So we have here the great Joseph Mathers, who played Joe Simon in the play, and I was wondering if you mind coming up, and we will give you guys do a scene for you guys, a reading from the play.
So excited.
If you guys are down with that. Totally unexpected. So that's... I will let Joe sit here.
Great.
And this will require some stage directions at the end.
Oh, this is exciting.
But basically, here, Joe.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joe Mathers.
Thank you for coming down and appearing in this show.
Thanks for having me. I'm an actress. And,
it shows.
Lovely. I came from where I did some metal work today, so I'm a little grimy.
Metal work? Great. Yeah. Are you classically trained? I'm a classically trained actor as well.
Oh, right on.
As I think, so it's great to meet you.
Secret handshake.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And as you can see from Joe's shirt, he was also in the stage version of Action Philosophers.
That's true. Yeah. Comic called Action Philosophers, which... previous comic theater festival, Crystal adapted just herself into a play, and Joe played Marx and all sorts of.
I was at one point. I was a French Jesus.
That's right.
Very exciting.
That classic. A lot of it's the Jesus I believe in.
If you're gonna have a
core.
Jesus, you should be French.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone give that guy a mic if you're gonna talk.
Sorry. So Joe Simon, for those of you guys who don't know, was Kirby's primary collaborator in the 40s and 50s. And together they create a character called Captain America, which you may be familiar with. In this scene, Joe has recognized Kirby and Simon started out working at this really sleazy publisher called Fox Feature Syndicate that they're most sort of famous. They had a couple of famous creations, the most famous which most people know now is Blue Beetle. They came up with Blue Beetle, but I guess they were also...
Great. Edgy hero.
Yes. And so in this scene, let's see how
services.
And this is all theater magic happening before your eyes. This isn't up and rehearsed.
There,
talked
there are some
about.
Stage directions.
Yeah, this was concocted
this is what we call
mere
cold
minutes
reading.
Ago. Yeah.
So Justin will play.
Oh
Kirby.
Shit! Okay, great. Well, hold on. Sorry,
Joe,
Pete.
You are Joe.
Okay.
Great.
And the scene starts down there.
All right.
So they are in Simon's apartment.
Do you guys need to do any like vocal warm-ups or anything, or do you
yeah,
need to?
Yeah,
I have a show where they show clips, except we're doing it live.
Live clip. No, I warm up before every comic book club.
Oh wow!
I warm up before I go to any bar.
Yeah.
Smart.
That's
smart.
How you know we're professional actors.
And action.
We want to increase our income, we got to increase our output. Marty Goodman over at Timely Comics is paying $14, $15 a page for new comic book characters. I figure between your speed and my horse sense, I figure we can triple our income. If Fox is paying us, if we moonlight over there too.
I've got some sci-fi strips I wrote and drew on my arm. Cosmic Carson. He's just like Elliot Ness.
Elliot Ness never wore a fishbowl on his head that I was aware of.
You ever try busting gangsters on Saturn without one?
That's cute, Jack. We gotta go for something that'll sell.
It'll sell because it's good. What is so funny?
I loved you, kid. Seriously. Deeply and truly. How'd you fall into this racket again?
I was gonna jump off a roof if I turned into my dad.
Tell me about it. My dad was a tailor.
Mine worked in a sweatshop.
Pants.
Hey,
clink.
Fucking pants.
I like this stuff. I do. And I get it. You like the amazing story stuff, and that's great. But this isn't about what you want. This is about what they want. The kids want Superman. We got to give them a Superman, different. An idea nobody's done before. Fox has got Blue Beetle, right? So why not different animals? Like a bird.
Hawkman. Got that in National.
Cat.
Wildcat, National.
Fish.
Submariner at Timely. Aquaman at National.
Okay. Forget the animals. Elements, fire.
Human Torch, Timely.
Earth.
Rockman, also Timely.
Air.
Airman, Centaur.
Water.
Yeah.
Aquaman, Submariner, Ryan. Jesus, this is harder than it looks.
They sit in silence for a time, thinking. The music on the radio is interrupted by a news bulletin. We interrupt this broadcast for an important news bulletin. Paris has fallen to the Third Reich. Nazi panzers and stormtroopers roll through the once proud French capital as British forces retreat. German Führer Adolf Hitler is now the undisputed master of the European continent. The sound of Hitler addressing a cheering crowd comes out of the radio. Simon and Kirby listen to it for a second, and then Simon gets up and turns the radio off.
Say, maybe we're going about this the wrong way.
Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe we should start with the villain.
And scene.
Wow. Yeah.
Powerful.
Thanks, buddy.
Good stuff.
Well done.
Well done. You know, I tried to slip into a role. Thank you.
I'm a better actor for having done that with you.
Yeah. Oh, man. I wish more people said that.
That's the first time
most people,
you've probably gotten.
I'm much worse off for being even close to you, is what I usually hear. Well, that's awesome. That is, and so people are going to be able to get this soon.
Yeah, right now, and you can get it on my website.
Nice.
Yeah, it's basically sold on Amazon, right, from your website?
Yeah, basically, we'd only offer this for the Kickstarter backers, but I was, frankly, sort of hounded for copies. So I just said, I slapped it up on CreateSpace, which is Amazon's POD service. And so I was like, go there.
Go
get it. You know. Go for it.
Yeah, what's really cool about it, too, is that he's interspersed the photos I took, as well as Hunter Canning, a wonderful photographer. But also, in the back, even this scene has annotated notes. So
yeah, there's a scroll commentary, and then the front, there's a great interview that Chris and I did for Broken Frontier, which is a great comic site.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So basically, they came up with the Red Skull first, and then came up? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
They created Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Those bastards.
Oh, you should know Pete doesn't know that Hitler's real.
Yeah. That's right.
He was really scared for a long time. I was like, no, Pete.
He's that guy that Captain America is punching on.
He's
punching
on. That's right. As he knows, World War II was.
I just have to do the beginning of the next scene because it's my favorite part.
Well, please.
So it's just you want your hero punching Adolf Hitler in the face on the cover of the first issue.
This is the editor of Timely, the owner.
Joe. He's Captain America. That's right.
The superhero represents patriotism. It smashes the U.S.'s enemies. It's what he does.
But Hitler, a real person, on the cover, in the face, Can he sue us?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how World War II started. Pete, as you know.
Yep.
But I do like, what I like about the annotated notes is it really reflects the struggle of the dramatist as well to say, hey, you know, this is more specifically how things went down, or perhaps you can weigh both sides, or you can look at, you know, other things in it, and so read it in a more complicated way, which I really love. The play embraces that, and it's about conversation. So
that's awesome. Definitely check it out. Imagine if they put, like, if, I don't know, Hawkeye was shooting Vladimir Putin with an arrow or something. No, there's no way that would ever happen today.
Oh, man.
But it would be awesome.
Yeah, think about
Putin
it.
Putin would catch it and throw it back at him or something.
It would bounce off his abs.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Putin's a listener of the show, so he loved that shout-out. Let's move on to our next section, which we like to call the Stab. We have gone through the voluminous selections of comics that came out last Wednesday and picked some favorites to talk about, and we are going to do it right now.
Sweet.
Up first, Pete's pick, The Wake, number 10 from Vertigo Comics. Have a look, guys. This comic, written by Scott Snyder, drawn by Sean Murphy.
It's the last one.
It's the last one.
Yeah.
So, Pete, what made you pick it?
Well, this was kind of a... I mean, Scott Snyder is known for his Batman stuff, and he does a lot of amazing stuff, but I really liked how The Wake was different, very imaginative, got deep.
Underwater.
You know, well, underwater, but yeah, also talked underwater. About life.
That's what you meant, right?
No, I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
Well done, sir. Yeah. Well done.
It was so good, it was hard to take a breath.
You know what I mean?
Drowning in
Come
quality
on.
Writing and art.
So yeah, this was a crazy 10-issue run that really was pretty all over the place. But I thought it ended really nicely. You know, made you think a little bit, and I thought it was really fantastic.
Yeah, I've loved this comic all the way through. It's a pretty crazy structure. It was set in the first, I think, 5 issues are set in modern day. A team of scientists hearing this signal from underneath the water, and there's these sort of mermen who are very sharp teeth, have a lot of sharp teeth.
Or mer people.
Mer people. I mean, I don't know. I guess they're sort of...
Mer persons.
When I see a mermaid, I don't see this, so I guess they're mermen. I don't know.
Yeah.
The mermaids are off on a beach just sunning themselves.
I don't see
gills. Yeah, exactly. I don't see gills. Yeah. I will say, and then it took it flash forward to the far future where the Earth is mostly water, everything's underwater. The end of this, though, I would have a hard time explaining it to anybody. Do you have a sort of insight onto what trippy...
Yeah, I mean, the only way I could kind of put it is I love the analogy of, like, the seed... starting this idea of not only like growth in our minds, but also growth as human beings and like where we can go and putting in this idea of a ladder, you know,
Holy
like reading
shit.
Our, and the top rung is our top potential and like how far do we make it up, you know? And then this idea of like, there's all these earths out there and like, you know, if you shot like a seed at each planet, you know, what would grow there and all that kind of stuff. So I just thought
That's
it was like
the most touching thing I've ever heard you say. And how high were you when you read this?
I wasn't high.
Yeah, right. Have you guys been reading this at all?
We actually saw some original art, didn't we, at Awesome Con?
I bet.
Did we?
We did?
I think so.
I think she's asking
apparently
you.
Apparently we saw some original art at Awesome Con.
Oh, hi. How high were you at Awesome Con?
Very high. So high.
It's not called Awesome Con.
That's
called
it
that.
Yeah,
exactly. We were that high.
That's what you call every Sunday,
awesome.
Right? Every Sunday's
this
Awesome
Con. This con is awesome.
It's a great book. I'm sure it'll be collected pretty soon. Please check it out. Let's move on to talk about another much-talked-about book that came out this week, Hawkeye, number 19.
Yeah.
Have a look at that. An issue that involved a lot of sign language.
Sign language, yeah.
Which I don't really know.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't. I mean, a lot of people take it in school. I took French in school, which is nearly useless in a lot of my regular life.
You should have taken sign.
Great, you're right.
Yep.
I would have really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah.
But it still is good.
That's what I like is with a lot of these issues in Hawkeye, they really try stuff. And not only that, but they don't slow it down or dumb it down to explain it to you. Like the whole pizza dog thing was mostly no talking, all panels. And this is very similar, but it's also all just sign language. Yep. And you really have to kind of think about it and put it together a little bit to understand what's happening. It took me a couple reads.
Yeah. What I like about it, I mean, sign language, it's presented very visually, and comics obviously visual medium, so it really plays nicely as a whole piece, but again, it's hard to quite tell what's going on. Have you guys read Hawkeye at all? And
Hodge is great. I mean, what he's doing in this book is pretty incredible with the storytelling, and they just keep innovating every issue, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Though I will say this storyline's been going on for a million forever, it feels like. So I'm excited to finish it and move on to the next thing. I mean, there's been some delays with the book, obviously, and it's been jumping back and forth between Kate in L.A.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's been the pace has really slowed down. So I'm excited to see what the next move is and to figure out what happens with old Teardrop Gun.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a cool villain.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you like mimes?
No, I hate that. I fear them. So that's why it's great to see one in a mean position. Otherwise, mimes are sort of, they're not going to do much to you.
Really?
You ever crossed a mime?
Yeah, oh, man, it's the worst.
That's a story for another day. Let's move on and talk about...
Yeah, let's talk about some of your picks.
A couple of pick comics I picked. Let's talk about Uncanny X-Men number 24.
It's a crowd favorite.
A crowd fave. Now, this comic, written by Brian Michael Bendis.
Who?
A little guy. He is sort of little. But
I would not call him that.
He has a big presence. So this comic, the last issue was an Original Sin crossover and was teased as The Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier. And it was like an all black cover, and it was like, oh, here we're going to find out about the will.
Right.
That issue went by. No much mention of the will. This issue, it's like, whew, now we're definitely going to find out about this will.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was last issue, and this issue, the tease at the end of this issue
is now it's time
to read this will.
Are you going to fall for it again?
Well, that's the thing. This comic is always, that's a terrible cliffhanger anyway.
Yeah.
But this comic's always the top of my stack. I'm always excited to read it. And then I finish it, I'm like, that was like eating the quickest little snack. And then it's gone. And I don't know, I want to open that up to everybody. Does anyone else feel this way? Because I like it, but I feel like it's junk food. Is that true, anybody? Yes. Especially this particular, his X-Men work specifically, I feel like. And I don't know. I don't know what's...
Are you saying you're going to stop reading it?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, like, I'm hungry.
Are you calling out Michael Bendis right now?
Are you calling it the MSG of comics?
That's what it feels like. Yes, exactly. It's like, yeah, I feel still full. It's like just eating Chinese food every week. But it is great. The characters are all interesting, but not a lot happens. And I just hope we don't have to, like, next week we're going to find
out. I hope the next issue is just the will.
Just
a panel and just, like, just the will. And be like, you wanted it.
And it's going to be like, next week we're going to find out who the witness was. Who co-signed the will.
Yeah.
It's a character we haven't met
yet. And then that's three issues, and they keep teasing it.
Bus should we take to the lawyer's office to hear the reading of the will?
Oh, and Wolverine's like, I know this bus. I'm the best there is at riding the bus.
I need to get a pass. Hold on. Yeah. I'll crap it over a Metro card. I don't know if I have a Metro card.
And they're going to hate Cyclops because he's going to take a different bus. And it's a nightmare.
Oh, my God.
It's a nightmare. Real morass.
Well, everybody hates Cyclops.
Yeah.
It's a rule.
It's a rule?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's sort of, I think they're mending fences. That happens in this book.
I'm not. Nope.
You're not?
No way.
You'll fall back in love. Come on, you like Spider-Man again.
That's true. Touche, asshole.
You just will never like me for some reason. Let's not talk about one last comic, Secret Avengers number 6.
Yeah.
I love this comic. I feel like it's an under-read comic right now. It's a really sort of fresh, the pace at which the stories are told. It uses a lot of different styles. There's a video game moment where Black Widow fights Lady Bullseye. It's really fun.
Round two, fight!
There's so much going on in this comic. There's a monster that they found out was pregnant, and they're trying to find out like how this monster... MODOK is trying to find out how the monster got pregnant. There's a Spider-Woman.
Someone has to sit MODOK down and explain the birds and bees to him.
I don't want to do it.
MODOK. Yeah.
How come you don't know this by now?
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to be really smart.
That's how it happens? Yeah, I know. It surprised me too. But if you want to read like an action-packed, fast-paced, it's sort of, we talk a lot about the Hawkeye-ification of the Marvel Universe, where so many of the characters are like very cool, they're doing their own thing, it's a little bit raw, more raw storytelling. This feels like a good, fast-paced version of that, which I really like. Maybe that's because two of the comics we talked about today, I was like, these are slow. But it's great, especially in the sort of Marvel Now world. This is stands out to me.
And Michael Walsh, who draws this comic, is wonderful, does a lot of covers for a series I do called Archer and Armstrong, and he's actually writing and drawing for the first time a story in Archer and Armstrong number 25, which is coming out in 2 months.
Oh, he's so, writing and drawing?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
Dig, so Secret Avengers, check
kicked,
out.
He kicked you off the comic so he could do one?
Well, it's a double-sized issue, so it's like 8 writers, including me, so I have a story in there as well.
All right. Good. Yeah, you gotta eat.
Well, it's more of we didn't kick anybody out. We brought in the tent.
No,
brought
nice.
People in.
Nice.
You got to do it. Awesome. That's it for the stack, guys. And now we're going to turn it over to our favorite section because you guys make it up. It's our audience question.
Sweet, yeah.
And so we have there's tons of stuff to talk about. If anyone has a question for us, for the guests, for all of us, please raise your hand and we'll come over to you. And you're going to get some free comics.
Yeah, you will.
You, sir, what's your name?
Julian. So I have actually more than just one question, but since I missed the play, are you planning to show it again? And then could you comment a little bit on like the research part, you know, how you research the story? And last but not least, my wife is also a writer, and we can't get along to write together. Do you have a couple's tip what I can do better? So
wow. That's a lot.
Do you want to take
lot.
Those?
Let's
I
go
love it.
Let's go backwards. Well, yeah, the first
you did say, does anyone have a question, right, to the audience? You did say that?
No. The first one I have a very simple answer to. It's booze. That always nice. Helps the marital co-writing
that was the
situation.
Last question.
Yeah,
I know. I'm going backwards.
Oh, okay.
Guys, don't have a fight here in front.
Oh, God, guys,
fighting helps.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
and booze does help as well.
A lot of the research I drew from the biography I mentioned, like back in the 90s. So I did a lot of, you know, fortunately Kirby and Simon and Stan Lee and all the comics guys, these are some of the most interviewed human beings on the planet. So you can sift through just pages and pages and pages of them talking about their lives. But there were guys like Gil Kane who were interviewed in places like the Comics Journal. It was, I found very interesting, and he was there when Kirby and Lee's relationship was deteriorating, and so he had kind of a nice outsider's perspective on that. But mostly I lean very heavily on a great magazine called the Jack Kirby Collector that Tomorrow's publishes that they've been doing forever in the 90s. And they have various collected editions of that. As to the future... Oh, and I also did a book called The Comic Book History of Comics that IDW published that came out a couple years ago. And so I drew from my own work.
Uh-huh. And just a little bit about that. It's kind of interesting about the play because it really... Some people heard the story, but, you know, it started as a play that Fred was writing. I mean, this was beginning when we were dating, as Fred was saying. So this was, you know, we're, you know, 90s to the 2000s. Oh, what'd you get? But then he drew from the play and took a lot of what he researched from that into Comic Book History of Comics. I very much love that, but even when I read that, I was like, this Jack Kirby through line, it just sings, you know? I can't wait to see it just on its own. And so when we returned to the play, it even captured some panels moment to moment, like Stan Lee and you know, getting his...
Because I was too lazy to come up with a new scene.
But we really, actually, that was sometimes
this.
That was
this
fun on stage. There was this wonderful transition in the play that really broke the actors' brains, but that's what's just Joe's like...
Oh, Joe,
that's the fun part.
Joe just threw his drink down and walked out.
But it was literally a moment where in the comic, you know, it would just be a flashback like that. And it was just Stan, you know, talking to Kirby. But then he's like, well, this is the way, you know, the office has been run since you've been gone. And it goes into a flashback. On stage, you know, if we're going to move very quickly, how does that happen? I'm in a present scene with you. How do I make this transit? So it's literally, he jumps over. And then all of a sudden, we know we're in a different time period. But yet Kirby's watching this flashback and still part of it. So all that has to be translated onto stage and dynamically so.
And why don't you talk a bit about the future of the play?
Yes. So, I mean, hey, you know, we are very excited. We're getting requests for the play all over, which is really exciting. So theaters all over are reading the play, which is great news.
It's being translated to Italian?
It is being
translated.
Yes. So, I mean, there's a lot of excitement. We.
I don't know about that.
But, I mean... I think it's, you know, we're really looking for, you know, producers that are excited to, in terms of it reengaging with New York, really looking to invest in that and being excited about that.
We've gotten very specific requests from Chicago, Seattle, and Philadelphia, and Rome.
Wow. Hey, who needs a vacation?
Yes.
Philadelphia or Rome? What do you think?
Can Amtrak go to Rome?
Yeah.
But I would say that, I mean, I have the feeling that, you know, we want to come back to New York, obviously, you know, as soon as possible. But I feel like the answers will present themselves as we keep getting the word out there about the play and sharing it and getting in the hands of people that are excited about it. So,
awesome. Yeah. Great. Who else has a question? How about you, sir? And if you want to start making your way up here, it'll be much easier.
Oh, it's terrible. Can I say one more thing about... there will be an audio recording, so we're doing it next week.
Joe and the whole gang is getting back together next Monday for the something for the Kickstarter backers. Whether or not that is released to the general public...
We'll have to figure it out.
It's sort of something we have to kind of ask permission from the backers. Yeah. It's supposed to be exclusive.
Oh, man.
We'll see.
The investors.
Yeah, the investors.
Exactly. Great.
This is like a really related question. Who would win in a fight... Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy or Gamora the Giant Turtle?
Ooh.
Oh, I like these questions.
Wow. Gamora from Guardians and Gamora? Is that how you say it? For the Giant Turtle. And Gamora was a fought Godzilla a couple times. Different continuity? Just an unrelated Giant Turtle? Okay, cool.
I mean, how do you defeat a Giant Turtle?
Once it goes in its shell, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Right?
And couldn't Gamora also breathe atomic fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not looking good for Gamora. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. She's really fast.
Yeah, she's pretty badass.
If she got in the shell. Or also, turtles are slow. And she's fast.
That's true.
That's what I love about these who would win in a fight X or Y questions, because does running away, does escaping count as winning? Like, as in, like, if you're faced with a giant atomic fire-breathing turtle isn't getting out alive, you're winning, my friend.
Yeah. I found success in running away.
Really? I think you would have to build a giant tank for the turtle and then get him a little light. And then feed him, and then he would die. You play the long game.
Oh, you're
you play the long game with a turtle, yeah.
So really the way to kill Gamora is to have Pete adopt him and then slowly let him die in his house.
But wait. You dress the tank up as a sexy lady turtle and kind of lure Gamora in.
Yeah.
No, what? She's an assassin. She has no scruples.
Yeah, she has no scruples.
She can try that.
I don't know. Did you watch the movie?
What's the mission? I didn't. I actually saw Boyhood. We saw Boyhood.
Did you really? That's...
It was great. Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah. No, I actually haven't seen it.
I'm looking forward to it. I've
watched the trailer for Boyhood over and over again, and I think it's really
good. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So
is it good? A lot of people said it was maybe said good or bad. Someone told me they walked out of it. I was like, what?
Wow.
They heard it was Guardians of the Galaxy, and they were really confused.
They're like, oh, this better start getting into space soon. great. Next question. You, sir, who's come all the way from the back.
Okay, so slight spoiler alert. At the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, it seemed like they set up his father in a weird way that led me to believe that they might change his father to be someone more prominent from the Marvel Universe, like Captain Marvel, or like Howard the Duck, something good like that. So what do you think about that theory, and who would you want it to be?
Great question. Great question. What did you say your name was?
John.
Hi, John.
Jor-El. It's Jor-El.
Yeah. It's going to be finally the DC-Marvel crossover we've all demanded.
I did feel that like they did that a little bit, too, at the end of the movie. So I'm glad that you...
Yeah, well, I guess we will be talking about the end of the movie now, so if you haven't seen it, which you're a psychopath, then plug your ears. But
have you seen Captain America 2 yet, asshole?
No, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy. That's worth a lot.
I love how you're like, oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. You haven't seen it. You haven't seen Captain America 2, so shut the fuck up.
So now my opinion's less valid?
Yep.
Okay. I heard a lot of people theorizing that it was maybe going to be an Asgardian. It was going to be, which I think would be, for those of you who don't know, the father of Peter Quill in the comics is a person, the king or leader of Spartax. Jason. It's convenient that his name is also an English name, a popular English name. But and he came to Earth and then left left his son there. And some people were asking me, like, who I saw the movie with. They're like, who's his father? I was like, well, it's Jason from Spartax. They were like, shut the fuck up.
If you don't know, don't make something up.
Yeah. And it would be weird because, well, Spartax also, if I'm correct, is like a sort of a secret planet. It's been long thought, or at the beginning of the continuity, the current sort of Peter Quill continuity, it was a missing planet, and then it later reappeared. I feel like in the second Guardians of the Galaxy, they may introduce that, and that may be
volume
what that story
two?
Is about. No, the sequel.
Yeah, yeah. Calling it Volume 2.
Oh, good. No one calls movies that. And I think it makes it sound sort of boring. So I think that that would be great fodder for the second movie, and then leading up to the Infinity Gauntlet in the third movie.
You got it all worked out.
Yeah. And so that's what my... I think they will actually make it follow the comic book continuity, but...
I disagree. I think it's not going to follow the comic.
You think it's going to be someone we already have met?
Yeah.
Who?
I don't fucking know. Just saying that, like, the way they set it up, it makes it feel like they're going to make a different choice with it.
So I don't know if you want to go on a limb here, since this is a show where we talk about stuff like this, and make a guess.
I don't know.
You really don't know?
I don't.
You won't say?
I don't know. I mean, you want me to say something stupid and you can make fun of me for it?
Is that what you want? No. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Thank you, audience member. Great. We've got time for maybe one or two more. Are you, sir?
My name is Pablo, by the way.
Hey, Pablo.
Hello. The Kirby estate, what did they think of it?
We got a very nice letter from Neil Kirby, Kirby's son, that they saw the New York Times review and they were very supportive. So we sent them a copy of the play, and we hope to include them in future iterations.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. That must be exciting.
It was very cool. It was very cool. And I guess... I wish I had more of the details off the top of my head, but there's a great brewery in Clifton Park, New York.
I didn't think you were going to say that, but I'm glad you did.
they make a brand called Hebrew.
Ah, yes.
Get it? The Jewish beer.
Yeah.
And on Thursday, August 28th, they're doing a whole Jack Kirby birthday party, and they're doing a special brew called, coincidentally, King Kirby.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
And Chris and I will be in attendance raising money for the Hero Initiative, which is a great charity that raises money for... the medical needs and retirement needs of combo creators, and Ron Mars, who's a terrific comics writer
Ron
as
Mars.
Well, will be there as well.
I just read, he wrote a great issue of Adventures of Superman that came out this week as well that was awesome.
And I thought because the Kirby family, which is California-based, is doing a bunch of stuff for the same event, for the Heroes Initiative out west.
Cool. That's awesome. Great. Another question. You, sir?
Yeah, it's sort of a continuity of the last question. Firstly, by the way, Boyhood sucked. Huge disappointment. 12 years making a movie and they had no point. It was really disappointing.
We can agree.
All right, guys,
disagree.
We're not here. This isn't Boyhood Club.
We're all adults here.
Comics.
We're all adults
so stay
here.
Focused on comics.
Sorry. Sidetrack. Secondly, did you have to get any permissions from the Kirby estate to tell the story? Did you have to clear any facts with them, or did you just have freedom because he's passed on?
Well, it's not because he passed on. It's because he's a public figure. I mean, that's you know, I've always operated as an artist from the assumption that it's better to get forgiveness than permission. And from a First Amendment standpoint, we don't need their permission. So fortunately, things have turned out very well. So that's
did
awesome.
Did it stress you out a little bit that you were like, oh, man?
A little bit. Yeah. But, you know, I had already done Comic History of Comics. I've been working on it for so long.
You've been in that pool.
And, you know, I mean... You know, anyone who thinks that people are making a bundle of money off indie theater in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, need to get their head
examined. Wait a minute, we're not making millions
off
indie theater in Williamsburg, Brooklyn?
Drink more.
I love you, the best drink ever.
Great. One more question from you, sir.
Yeah, guys. I just want to know, I really like hearing the lives of creators. I find them very interesting. So other than Kirby... And this goes to all of you. Is there any other creator that whose life story you either find inspiring or interesting, or just something that you really like? Yes.
Well, if you pick up the Comic History of Comics, available now on Amazon, you will read about 15 of them. One creator.
Wow.
In the comic book world, you're saying?
I mean, I lean towards that. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Just say yes. Great.
You know, this is just sort of what pops into my mind is that I wrote G.I. Joe for a while last year, and so I had the wonderful privilege of signing with Larry Hama.
Yeah.
And Larry is such a fascinating individual. Oh, he's one of the first artist to be picked as an editor at Marvel. He was the first non-white person to be an editor at Marvel. He was a Vietnam War veteran. He got cast in Sondheim-specific overtures in an elevator.
Oh, that's right.
The man is... If you guys have ever seen that Wally... The famous Wally Wood... This is kind of inside baseball, but have you seen the famous Wally Wood's 22 panels that never fail?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shot... Larry Hama drew that. Like, he was Wally Wood's assistant. He came up with that. Wow. So I would have to say Hama is... By far, and he lives down the street from here in Tribeca, and he's amazing. Like, I could listen to him for days.
No, that's hilarious. That's awesome.
I can do a little comic book tie-in for another show that I think is really extraordinary. I had some things come up, so I couldn't see it, but I was on a panel of Geek Theater in Boston for a wonderful theater company called Company One, which I highly recommend. They do a lot of great poppy shows. They're not always comic book related, but this one was. It just ran and might still be running. It ran in July. I think it runs a little in August. It's called Astro Boy. And it's about the life of Tezuka, and I find him very inspiring. And what this artist did, which was incredible, was that she actually did the show in DC first, which was about his life, and then she reworkshopped it, and now is doing it at this theater, Company One. I think it's called Astro Boy and something. I forget what the full title is. But what she did with the actors is none of them could draw, and she did a boot camp. And she teaches them whenever she goes and works with it. She teaches them all to draw. So what I saw, I didn't know that when I saw the just before I do this panel about Geek Theater, right, and what she's going to be a part of it, and they're promoting the show. But basically, I see 10-minute snippet and it blew my mind. And these actors come running on, and they just had a white. Just drawing paper, and the actors come on, and they're, you know, dynamic, and actors are great, and then they just start drawing in different corners, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, look at that, they're doing some, that's awesome, and I was like, these are really fucking good. I was like, what the hell? I was like, oh, my God, and you don't know what they're doing yet, because everyone's doing it, they're part sun, moon, blah, 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 oh, a little city, oh, that's fun, and they're in interaction, then you realize there's a traffic light, and then and then all of a sudden, a girl, kind of dressed like Asteroid, gets out, and then she lies in front of the traffic light, and you hear on the radio, you hear the radio broadcast of Asteroid, blah, blah, blah. But what it is it's the beginning of the radio show about the origin of Astro Boy getting hit by the car. Well, not Astro Boy, but the boy. And so what's incredible then is then they could do in the sunny, beautiful scene, they go, splash, they take red paint. And then they sprinkle red dust in front of you and you realize, oh, this is how then Astro Boy was created as, you know, memorial to this child,
oh,
this
awesome.
Dead child, which is a very dark origin, obviously. But I just thought it was extraordinary what she was doing on stage, and it reminded me how much. And she talked about meeting Tezuka when she was 12. I wish I could remember her name, but Astro Boy, this theater show. If you Google Company One, it'll come up. And she met him when she was 12, and she said, "I want to work with you. I want to do comics for you." And it was near the end; it was the last year of his life. And he's like, "That's great." She's an Asian American, and he was like, "That's wonderful. Come back when you're older."
Yeah,
he's 12, and he had passed away shortly after that. And so,
wow.
The show is almost an homage to him.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. But yeah, I would say that all his obstacles, I think, influenced Western storytelling as well, and vice versa. I just think is a really cool, amazing thing, and I love how you cover him in Comic Book History of Comics too. So.
Thank you.
Cool. Very nice. Any creator you want to shout out?
Fred Van Lente.
Oh, great. That's really nice. Wow. Great stuff. Glad you were here for having him say that. Also, that's it for the Week in Geek, or that's it for audience questions.
Yeah.
And let's move on and very quickly talk about, in the Week in Geek, a little bit of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Apologies. You can do a Boyhood review right after this. Is that cool? These guys want to know, except for him.
We're not actually going to do that.
Huh? Guardians of the Galaxy, crush of the box office. Pete, what did you think?
I've been excited for this movie for a really long time. I tried to keep my expectations low. This was an amazing movie from start to finish. I really loved how different it was, but also how confident it was in the choices. Like, the beginning, it's like he's just dancing on a planet, and it's a ballsy move, and it pays off so well. I just love a lot of the choices that made. Like, you don't really get origin stories. You get in the middle of action, and they just kind of, you get little snippets of it. It's just really, really well done. It's so funny. The action's unbelievable. I mean, I didn't think I'd be saying this out loud, but Vin Diesel is is amazing, you know? I mean, it's
just, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it made me cry.
Yeah, like, it was, and
if someone told me Vin Diesel was going to make me cry, it would be like after punching me?
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
because
but it was true. Also because, you know, he just says I'm Groot, but then the part where you think he might say it and he just turns and smiles is so amazing. It's just, it was so
it is, it's amazing how much it's very fun. The movie is just fun. It's like a joy. It's one of the only joyful movies. It's watching this and watching rewatching the most recent Superman movie, it's like Jesus Christ. That movie's so depressing and just like a bummer, especially the last half. And this movie is the opposite of it. Yeah. And even just all the way down to the colors in this movie, like so much like purple, everything, red, yellow. And then you look at the DC movies and it's all just gray. It's like taking a long nap in a rainy day.
And Bradley Cooper,
the Nolan palette,
exactly the Nolan palette. Like, oh, that's far too bright gray for this. We can't
turn that down a bit.
Yeah, turn that down. More steel.
Bradley Cooper's voice as Rocket Raccoon is amazing. And
so, the voice work, and a lot of people are like, Bradley Cooper, he's a jerk. What's he doing in this movie?
Unbelievable.
And it's
And I loved how like the scene where Rocket Raccoon gets drunk is just so powerful, and it's like, oh my God. And then when you see him with his back and you see the little thing, you're like, holy shit, this guy's been through a lot. And
this raccoon's been through some stuff.
Yeah. He's,
which I don't understand either.
I was like, oh man, it was just so fantastic. And then the, you know, Drax, when you're like, okay, we're going to have this real badass, this real life badass guy in there. And then the choice to make him like not understand sarcasm is so
just totally on his planet.
Yeah.
Totally
just like, he doesn't understand sarcasm. It goes over his head. Nothing goes over my head. I have amazing reflexes.
Yeah.
It was just
very
so
funny.
Amazing.
Great joke. And let me correct me if I'm wrong. That's not in the comics. No, it's not. That's a totally new creation for the movie, which is very, very funny.
Yeah.
The one thing that I was a little like, what's going on here, is first off, they call them the Infinity Stones, which seems like a very easy change. They're gems.
Yeah.
Stones are like on the ground. Gems are in little balls that you have to hide.
Little balls?
Gems are on 47th Street.
Yeah, exactly. Gems are precious. Stones are garbage. And also, so that was, it was the purple gem, which is space, if I'm correct. Anybody? Yeah, cool. Thanks. Yeah. But I don't understand how they're using, because the way it's worked out so far, the blue, the Tesseract is blue, is the blue gem. And then in Captain America, there's like a red one or something. I don't know.
Thor.
Yeah, and which I have seen that. That's the power gem. And then purple space, but it's not used sort of in the way the space gem is used, which I thought was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that the Tesseract would be the space gem because it opened portals, which is what they did.
It just seemed
Am I dwelling on this for too long?
Yeah, I think maybe, because it seemed like the space gem just made you hold hands as a group.
And that's a great...
Because that's a great gem to have.
Yeah.
You know,
I wish I had that gem right now.
The friendship gem?
The friendship gem.
Friendship gem.
Like Heart from Captain Planet. just throw Heart in there. It'll be fine. People like it. Great. Well, if you haven't seen it, then please see it. Chris Pratt's amazing.
By the numbers, you have seen it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Looking at the way
we
people...
We haven't seen it yet. Now I'm excited.
Like, yeah.
You should see it.
We didn't spoil too much. It is just... I think it's my... I felt like Avengers had some better moments that got me more excited, but as a movie, this was by far my favorite of the Marvel movies.
And the after credits was pretty hilarious.
Are there bloopers?
There's not a blue. That would be great.
I love bloopers.
I know, me too. There's a scene that is confusing at best that happens after the credits. And they make you wait through all the credits, and then you're like... Did I just imagine?
No, dude, what are you talking about? I thought that was so funny after the credits.
It was funny, yeah. No, I'm saying it was just very surprising and strange.
Yeah, out of left field, but it was great, though.
Okay, cool.
That's Guardians of the Galaxy, why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? There are no rules anymore. Why not?
You don't love it enough.
Yeah.
Love it more.
You love
Why won't you love it more?
No, I love it. Jim. I love it as much as anybody.
I don't know.
Oh, and Pete, Hitler is real. Sorry.
What?
Let's move over to trivia starring Pete LePage.
Starring. Wow. All right, guys. This is the part where we reward you for coming to the show. We really appreciate you showing up. It's an opportunity to win 25 free dollars in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like 25 free dollars? A simple raising of the hand will work. A raising of the hand will get you 25 free dollars. Yes, you, first hand up guy. Come on up. We're going to need a microphone for this. surprise guest.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Correct, sir. You win. What is your name? Share with everybody.
We don't know this man.
Yeah. Jim Salakrup.
Woo! Yeah, welcome.
Hey, Jim Salakrup!
All right, so how this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers, get all three questions right, and you will have $25. Here we go. Question number one. In Tim Seeley's really amazing Infinite Comics, Guardians of the Galaxy number one, who is Star-Lord locked in a cell with? Is it A, Rocket Raccoon, B, Drax the Destroyer, or is it C, Gozer the Gozerian? So it's either A, Rocket Raccoon, or it's B, Drax.
Well, I think A.
A is correct. Yeah, well done, sir. Well done. Question number two in Sandman Overture number three. What is the famous line the comic starts with? Is it A, to be or not to be? Is it B, it's the worst of times? Or is it C, we came, we saw, we kicked its ass? So it's either A, to be or not to be, or it's B. It was
B?
The worst of times. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You are correct. It is B. It was the worst of times. Is
aren't
the star?
You sorry you didn't come up now.
All right, here we go. Last one. In Hawkeye number 19, it starts with Clint as a blank. Is it A, kid? Is it B, a father? Or is it C, a Ghostbuster? It's not in there. It's not in there. So it's either A, a kid, which makes sense because it starts and he's younger,
really?
Or it's B, a father, which is incorrect.
Oh. Can I answer in sign language?
Yeah, we will accept sign language. Yes, A is correct. Congratulations.
Thanks.
You and $25 free, sir. I get paid more than you to do the show. That's hilarious.
Nice. Congrats. Awesome. Well, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they have been nice enough to sponsor this very show.
And they have some nice shops.
Oh, yeah. Great shops. Yeah. Pete, what are you looking forward to
tomorrow? I'm really looking forward to the new issue of Punisher and... And also Moon Knight. I've been really enjoying Moon Knight as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I took two because Albert's not here.
Yeah, great. That's totally fine.
He has a kid.
Yep. Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah.
Great. He's really cranking those
out. What a heartfelt way to reveal. I'm looking forward to Swamp Thing number 34, which is a very good comic, written by Charles Soule.
A little light appreciation for
that. Light, I know. And that's sometimes... That wasn't... You didn't do anything wrong. Fred, what are you looking forward to tomorrow?
Charles Soule.
Totally selfishly, I'm looking forward to... my image book is coming out tomorrow for kids, How Toons Reignition number one,
nice.
With great art by Tom Fowler and Jordi Belliere. How Toons is a comic that was created by East of West's Nick Dragata a while back. It teaches kids science and how to do projects you can do with your parents or, you know, where parents can do with their kids. And it's a sort of a post-apocalyptic storyline where two kids have to find their parents and they've got to sort of make projects along the way to survive. And so it's super fun. Tom is just kicking it out of the park. That whole
kicking
team,
it out of
Jordy.
The park. Yeah.
Is it that's a kickball?
It's
a kick in the
he's
pants.
A punter.
Yeah, he's a punter.
It's an NFL reference.
He's kicking it out of the stadium.
But Jordy and Tom and I did a book called Hulk Season 1 for Marvel, which we were super proud of, and we're super proud of this book as well. So if you have a kid in your life and you complain that there are no comics for kids, there's one tomorrow, How Toons Reignition.
Awesome.
It's really cool. Been watching it develop. Really neat.
Anything else you'd like to plug?
Yes. My friend Adam McGovern, who's actually a theater artist, but also developing in the comic book world, has a new comic called Night World. And he's signing along with Dean Haspel, who's signing about his new comic as well.
I think he's doing The Fox.
Right. And that is at
Forbidden Planet. I think, tomorrow night. So you guys should check that out. Night World is very apropos. It's very Kirby-esque. It's kind of this... What's that?
Hanley's.
Oh, it's at Hanley's. Thank you, Jim.
Oh,
it's
God.
At Hanley's.
Yes.
Don't go to Forbidden Planet.
yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Well, guys, that's a show. A couple of you want to thank before we go. We want to thank Fred and Crystal for coming down. We want to thank Midtown Comics for sponsoring the show, our interns. We want to thank you guys, our lovely audience.
Yeah.
Pete, anything you want to say?
Friend us on Facebook. Thank you guys so much for coming out. We really appreciate it.
And thanks, Joe Mathers, for coming out and doing that
thank
scene.
You, Joe
yeah,
Mathers!
Yeah, very cool. And most of all, I want to thank you guys as well, Fontana's as well. We do the show here every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Please come on down. Good night, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.